At the last meeting in August, we had kind of a list of issues that we had put together for possible interim work. And what I've done is refine that a little bit for the interim committee work plan, and that's before you. And eliminated a couple of things that will be focused on the House side. But there is some overlap between this list and what the House list is. So we would anticipate a number of these issues be discussed during joint sessions, joint meetings with the House. I'll go through them real quickly, and then for any, let me know of any questions that you have. The first on corporate tax issues, the cost of performance issue is one that you've heard a bit last interim. It's a pretty detailed issue, but it really affects the service-based companies and how their sales are apportioned. We use a cost of performance criteria, which basically says that for service companies, an Oregon sale is where the service is performed, so regardless of where the customer is. So that means that if you're an accounting firm and you're providing accounting services to a company in Denver, it's still going to count as an Oregon sale because you're performing that function in Oregon. A number of states have gone away from this, California most notably, to a more market-based measure of services, and that would be more consistent with how goods are treated through the sales factor. So it can work both ways in terms of revenue. Frankly, we don't know whether it's a positive or negative on the revenue side, because you will have companies that now are arguing that we're not taxable in Oregon, even though our customer's in Oregon, because we're doing a service in Illinois. We're actually performing the service in Illinois, therefore we're not subject to Oregon tax.
Paul, because I have bumped up, I have states all over that are contacting me, telling me I have to pay their state tax because I provide accounting services in other states. Some we have reciprocity with, some we don't. So it would also take money out of Oregon if I'm paying in Michigan or something like that. So is that factoring in there, or are we just... Are we looking at both those that we would be taxing because they're providing services here, as well as the dollars we would lose, mm-hmm. and we'd be taking that other state tax credit?
That's what I meant when I said that the net revenue impact is unclear to us now, because we both lose revenue and gain revenue, much as we did when we went through the sales factor. And when we switched to the sales factor, we actually had, when we looked at the large corporate taxpayers, there were more taxpayers who had a tax increase under the sales factor then got a tax decrease, even though the net revenue was a negative because there was a larger amount on those that got the decrease. So we don't know that distribution, but so you're going to have an Oregon company that is providing the service out of state would therefore have a tax decrease. And the net effect in terms of kind of the economic effect is you end up benefiting the export-oriented company. It becomes a destination-based tax.
How does that bump up against the interstate sales tax legal basis? You know, that says you know.
Well, the sales tax...
So much of it's CITUS, and yet we're moving away from CITUS.
The sales tax nexus through the Quill court case, Quill decision, is considered different. That requires the physical presence. Mm-hmm. Any corporate taxes that are going to be paid are subject to the federal law in which it requires a physical presence in that state to be taxable.
That's what I'm saying. How does this bump up against that if there's no physical presence in another?
If there's no physical presence in a state where you're selling it to, you would not be subject to tax in that state, and Oregon has a throwback rule. So you would throw those sales back to Oregon. The other issue I have there under corporate tax issues, we have a discussion today. It's not something that we can say with precision, but we know there are a number of court issues that are in process now. One involves the corporate minimum and the kicker calculation. The other involves the corporate minimum and tax credits. And then there's another one around the corporate minimum and how airlines are affected. And it has to do with the federal law. So we'll talk about those today. Whether that will involve some policy response, we don't know at this point, but you know, our goal here is to get an understanding of those issues and make sure that you're not caught by surprise if we see some court decisions come down that are possible. The next two issues are really kind of the broader issues, particularly the interstate competitiveness. I think we talked about this at the last meeting. The goal here is to try to drill down a little bit beyond kind of the overall rankings and overall tax burden into some specifics around industries and some comparisons about different taxes, how they affect different industries, and try to get a better understanding of how our system, which is, of course, a unique one, how it may affect labor and capital in those particular industries. So that's our goal for that. The local finances, you've done a lot of work in this committee around property values and Measure 50. We will get the assessed values and market values shortly, but those assessment dates go back to January 1. So the bills that are going out next month, they will be based on market value or assessed value as of January 1, 2011. So there is a lag there, but we're very curious to see what those totals look like and see what's happened. We know, for example, that in the last tax year in Deschutes County, the 20% of the residential properties were assessed at market value. Mm. So that's, of course, a huge change from what we've seen.
I'm sure that's gone up.
So we hadn't seen so much of that in the metro counties. No, Clackamas County was still a very low percentage. And so was Lane County, but we'll look at that and see with another year of falling values how that shapes up. We had originally planned to spend some time with the counties today, actually, on the federal timber payments as that program phases out. But I did talk with the Speaker's office, and they're working on a task force, and they asked us to delay our committee discussion till November. In which we will do, kind of assessing where the counties are, what the prospects are of any kind of renewal right now. Of course, it's anything in Congress is very hard to predict, but we're assuming that program is basically going to be phased out, and you'll be down to a residual flow of timber payments, which, as I recall, our last estimate was about 15% of secure rural schools level. So in other words, there will be some trickle come in, but it'll be the actual receipts and not the calculation, not the formula. And then, of course, that leads to a discussion about what kind of options may be available to the counties in terms of revenue, and that's something that we'll work with the counties to explore. The next issue I have on there is one that you also spent some time on, and medical expenses and tax policy. The first bullet there is around changes that are part of the overall federal Health Reform Act. And in that act, there is an increase in the floor for the itemized medical deduction. It goes from 7.5% to 10%. And as we've looked at the statute, we don't think we're automatically connected to that because our statute does refer to the 7.5. So that may be something that would come up as a possible issue to look at least look at what the implications of going to the federal level might be.
So we're not connected now?
Well, you know, when you first think about it, you would think you would be because of the tax base issue. But the statute does say will connect to the federal threshold level or 7.5%. So, I mean, there's 7.5% is actually in our statute. So I guess the honest answer is it's ambiguous at this point. But, I mean, with a 7.5% in there, it indicates that you'd have to change that or delete that 7.5%. Mm-hmm. in order to conform.
Which would be a tax increase in that case.
Which would be a tax increase, yes. And of course, there's also an interaction there with the senior medical deduction, and we would continue to look at that. And we have, of course, spent a lot of time on that over the last almost 10 years now. And we would continue to work on that and how that will interact with any possible changes in the federal threshold.
It seems like maybe there's an opportunity there to, for those of us who want to do something on that, to possibly combine the federal, any possible federal change, and get lessen that expense and use the proceeds to a similar seniors.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a number of options. You know, the one thing that we did look at quite a bit in the last session was changing the medical deduction from a deduction to a subtraction, which would have a significant shift on the beneficiaries of that. It would move them down to lower income folks would benefit, and then you'd put a cap on the subtraction. Mm-hmm. So there are a number of things you can do with it that would change the impact. There she is.
Oh, we're almost done.
So, yeah.
So, this is good timing.
Listen, you came in on the senior medical tax deduction discussion.
Have you solved all the problems?
Are you familiar with this issue?
Yes.
Never heard of it.
They just sent it out. Do pass to the floor.
Oh, that's my gratitude is boundless.
No, we expanded it because we didn't think it doesn't encompass everyone yet.
Oh, my.
We're not senior enough, so we wanted to expand it.
That's what I love about this committee. They are self-starters. So my apologies, committee. I can see we've got a very deep bench here. You solved all the problems. Where are we, Paul?
Madam Chair, we're going down the interim committee work plan list. We're actually right near the bottom of the first page with the medical expenses and tax policy.
Okay.
And we talked about the fact that the federal health plan that passed last year would increase that floor for itemized deductions for medical expenses to 10%. However, in our statute, it does refer specifically to 7.5%. So that is likely going to require a statutory change in order to connect to that.
That would have a revenue impact.
It would. The provision is effective in 2013. There's a couple of years yet before it would impact the federal tax base. The last issue I have on there is reserve fund policy, and of course that's one that you spent a lot of time on last session, and we continue to work on potential options for that. And we'll probably update you on that at some point, working a lot with Senator Morse on it. The next page, I think these issues were all things that were on the list that we had put together for the August meeting. So those are things that we're following very closely. Today, of course, you have some further information around the senior property tax deferral, focusing on the reverse mortgages and kind of the mechanics of that. We would anticipate further information from the Department of Revenue on their tax compliance and collections policies. And we do have a report that we'll have for you in November on Measures 66 and 67. We'll have 2 years of tax returns for Measure 66, and we'll have our first year of tax returns for Measure 67.
Okay.
And Chris is putting that together for you for the November meeting, so you'll be able to look at that. On potential legislation, what I've done, I've started a list, and I haven't. There are several things on the list that I've put only on the House side because they're 3/5. Like, for example, a 911 tax base issue that Representative Berger's working on. But these are, you know, possibly could be introduced by this committee or House or both, depending on how you want to work on those. The ones that we've clearly identified as possible for this committee would be the senior property tax deferral program changes. We're working particularly on what kind of adjustments might be made around the reverse mortgages. You'd mentioned the making the distinction between those that are already in the program versus those that are new applicants this time and how reverse mortgages will treat them. We still don't have our critical piece of information on that, and that is how many of those that were disqualified because of reverse mortgages have some other disqualifying characteristic, because that's the key for us. We think that based on what we've seen so far in the information we've got from the Department of Revenue, that the number of qualifying applicants is less than what we assumed, which would mean that you would have some flexibility in terms of making some adjustments relative to what our revenue estimates were.
And I assume I'm not the only one who's continuing to get
concerned. Daily.
Yes.
Yes, we get the phone calls too.
Yes.
So that's one thing we certainly plan to work on. We know from discussion with Department of Energy that there will be some clarifying language around the Betsy reform bill. You have also your old friend the Reconnect, which even though you're in the now in the rolling Reconnect, there are always a few definitional changes that have to be connected to. Right now, we think that'll purely be a housekeeping measure. But, you know, we've also, the president has some proposals before Congress, and, you know, who knows what'll come out of that. And then the other piece is discussions we've had with Department of Revenue, or mostly with Legislative Fiscal Office, about the DOR information system. You've heard a lot of, they have talked with you about that, the department has. There may need to be some language for them in terms of entering a performance contract with a vendor, in which the vendor would have a certain percentage of what increase in revenue there is. And that, of course, also means we'd have to set up a good, consistent monitoring process for how much revenue is generated from this system.
Now we have, as I recall, we have five committee bills.
You have five committee bills, two bills per individual member, and five committee bills.
Okay.
So for total bills that I have between the two revenue committees is seven is what I have on my list so far.
Paul, on the last bullet point, is this some of this reaction to the audit with the IT issue and the?
Senator, I would say that no, it goes back before that. This
okay.
is the need for the department to have, you know, their system is very outdated. It goes back 20
years.
Well,
much of the state audits. Concerns were really stemmed from an antiquated system that we have that can't
yes,
do some of
so,
the things.
That yes, so in that regard, yes.
Okay.
We have on your agenda for today, we do have Gary Blackmer will be here at 10:15 from the Audits Division, and they did a follow-up to the earlier audit they did of the Department of Revenue. So Gary's going to come and talk about those results. And that report that they issued is in your packet. In discussions with him, he said, yes, there are, a lot of the issues are related to the information systems, but he said there are other issues beyond that, too.
Mm.
So
oh, yeah.
he'll talk about that as well today.
Good.
In February, a meeting, or will there be the tax credit committee meeting? Will there be a reason?
The Joint Tax Credit Committee has been established as an interim committee, so it's it basically meets at the call of the chairs. Did have some discussion about getting the Joint Committee together during this set of legislative days, and the decision was made not to do so, but to wait. So it will either be in November or in January to get the Joint Committee together. We're doing some work on that kind of goes through a review of what was done in the session, and we've been getting feedback on what things you may want to think about doing differently. And then, of course, the other major element of that is to start to work on the credits you've got for next session.
Okay.
And there's some big ones.
The main one is the earned income tax.
Earned income credit.
Is the medical one, the rural doctor one up?
Rural
next
doctor
time?
One is up. The political contributions credit is up.
We're going to have fun. Oh, there's some good ones. Committee. No resignations from this committee will be accepted. So just want to head that one right off at the pass.
So the last thing I would say on this is that the deadline for requesting a draft is December 5th. So we'll have one more meeting, and then we'll make sure that we've got the five that you want as committee requests, have those ready to go to council by then, and then they must be filed by January 23rd. So you have a January meeting to introduce those.
Okay.
So the last thing you have is the rules.
Okay. Any change from previous times that we might not have noticed?
The rules are very consistent with what you've had in the past. Probably the most pertinent one is the last one there about the pre-session filing, because that'll be one of your major actions. And that, you know, you can have them introduced at the committee, but if you have from individuals, then you can introduce them as requested by.
Well, but we don't have to. This,
you don't
this
have
sounds
to
almost
that.
Like you have to.
Right.
But let the record show that we can just introduce them as simple committee bills without.
Yes. Well, the simple committee bills is introduced at the request of the committee on Senate, the Senate Committee on Finance and Revenue. That's how the bill appears.
Okay. All right. Okay. Questions?
We still only get one vote each?
Only one vote. Yes. It's not like the school formula.
There will be no Central Oregon.
There's
no formula here.
There's no
Central Oregon formula here. Okay. Senator Telford, do you have a motion?
Yes, I move that we accept and adopt the committee rules as of 8/26/2011.
Senator Telfer has moved that we adopt the committee rules as dated August 26, 2011. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Okay. Now I think that our next deal is the
move next door.
Reconvene. We move next door. So I think the order of business now is to adjourn.
The order of business would be to recess, and then you're going to reopen next door.
Okay. We will recess the Committee on Finance and Revenue.